chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm thrilled to have Tommy Spaulding on the show today. Tommy is the president and CEO of Spaulding Leadership Institute, the Spaulding Companies, a multi-time best-selling New York Times and Wall Street Journal author, and a keynote speaker. Well, Tommy Spaulding, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted that we could make this happen today.
Oh, my honor, Lisa.
And I already know that we probably could do a 5-hour podcast.
Well, we've already talked for 45 minutes before.
And we've tried to make this happen. Literally, I think we've probably been trying to make this happen for like 6 months. And I've been trying to get to your heart-led conferences. I'm glad we were able to do this, but we're going to keep trying on the heart-led conferences. And I want you to tell our listeners more about that later. But yeah, I'm very, very excited to have you here today. And I have to do a special shout out to our mutual friend, Sean Lambert, because if it had not been for Sean, you and I may not have met.
Homes of Hope, probably the best ministry I've ever been a part of.
I completely agree with that. And we've been on a couple of those home builds. And I remember the last one that we went on, and our oldest son at the time, we went between Christmas and New Year's. And he said, after the build, he said, I can't think of a better way to start the new year than doing this. And so for our listeners that are looking for something even to do as a family, a service, they do amazing work, and it's important work. But I can't wait for our listeners to hear more from you, Tommy. You've been named by meetings and conventions as one of the most favorite speakers in the nation. That's crazy. I know you're not going to want me to say all these accolades about you, but I'm going to do it anyway. You're an author of several national best-selling books. We're going to talk about a few of those today. And you're a mutual friend of ours, Ken Blanchard. Ken was my 200th episode of the Something Extra podcast.
Oh, I don't think there's a better human being in the world than Ken Blanchard.
I agree. Well, here's what Ken said about you. And when I read this, I'm like, wow, what an endorsement that is. But he said, you are one of the most inspirational, talented speakers in the country. Coming from Ken Blanchard, Tommy, that's pretty remarkable.
Well, I'm blushing right now. But Ken knows how to make everyone blush.
Yes, but he is. He is just... what a legacy that man is. I think I want to say when I had him on the podcast, and this was a few years ago, I think he was maybe 83, something like that, Tommy, or 84. And he was writing another book.
Yeah.
And yes. And he's like, the best is yet to come still. And I'm just like, that's how I want to be. I mean, he is just, it's not like the best years are behind him. He's like, still pushing with gusto. And I just, that is so inspirational to me.
Yeah. He's something special. When I first started writing books, you know, I had all these heroes that I read their leadership books or their, you know, their thought leader work. And then you get on the speaking circuit and you meet these people because you're at the same conferences. A lot of times you do dinner. And it was almost like finding out Santa Claus wasn't real. When my heroes that I love their books, I met them and said to myself, I would never say names, but man, they're not the same person, you know, off stage or off page. And it really broke my heart that how many people that I respected their work and their books and their speaking, and then you meet them and they're not, they don't treat their wives or their husbands or their employees or their, you know, or others the same way. And it was heartbreaking. And then you meet a Ken Blanchard, who was the greatest of all of the greats, you know, the number one business speaker and author of all time. And he is the most authentic, genuine, loving, vulnerable, real. He's a total giver and wants nothing in return. And, you know, he just makes up for all the broken hearts of the people that are not the real deal. You know, he's leading the charge of the ones that are.
Yes, that's good. Yeah, I agree. Well, we've got so much to talk about. Before we dig in, I really want you to take me back to your childhood. So I think you grew up in New York, went to Suffern High School. You were an Eagle Scout. You were the president of your class, all that. But tell me more. What did you like to do as a little boy?
I think I was overachiever, you know, the youngest Eagle Scout in the history of New York and like all these awards and stuff, because I was masking the real truth that I was a dyslexic, ADHD, ADD, really tough, you know, academic. I graduated high school with a 2.0 GPA. I barely got through high school. I was so lost in school because of my learning challenges. And back then in the 80s, Lisa, they don't know what to do with, you know, kids like me. So I was in the resource room that my friends like to call the retard room. And you know that that's a word that we never say, but I was called that a lot growing up. So I was like, I'm going to show them, I'm going to be on the football team, I'm going to be class president, I'm going to be, you know, the most popular kid in school. So I was an overachiever because I was just trying to mask, you know, a lot of insecurities about, I went to summer school all 4 years. I failed most of my classes and barely got through high school. And when it's time to apply to college, I really didn't get accepted in any colleges. And that's when I joined up with people, you know, right out of high school, because no great college would accept me with my grades and ACT and SAT were just so dismal. So I joined up with people, and that was really the organization that changed my life.
That was Up With People?
Yeah, that's an international leadership musical organization. It was really big in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I spent really 25 years of my life working for Up With People as a 17-year-old student and as a 35-year-old CEO. I grew up in that whole organization and went to 100 countries, lived in 3,000 host families. And that's when I really fell in love with loving and serving all people. So I really, most of my life, I dedicated my life to this mission. Up With People is about bringing all people together, Jews, Christians, Muslims, communists, capitalists, rich, poor, every walk of life, you know, like United Nations of young people, really building bridges of understanding. And it was life-changing for me.
Yeah. Boy, that's amazing. I mean, that's better than, I mean, you did end up going on to college and getting an MBA and all that. But I'm just thinking, man, that was probably more valuable to you, Tommy, than had you've gone to college. And I think I read somewhere where you became the CEO, but you were the youngest CEO in the history of that 42-year-old organization, which is amazing.
It was. It's such a blessing. But that organization really taught me to love all people. And I mean, I'm a believer. I'm an unabashed Christian. I'm raised Catholic, and I love Jesus, and I'm a practicing Catholic. But that organization taught me how to love Jews and Muslims and, you know, rich and poor and Democrats and Republicans and communists and capitalists, like to really have young people around the world that are your age that you fell in love with their hearts and they have differences. And it just really made me realize this world needs that more than anything, is to raise leaders that love and serve all people, because we're called to do that.
Yeah, no, that's good. You've written books about it, and we'll talk about that. But you did go on to get a BA in political science from East Carolina and an MBA from Bond, which is in Australia, right? So you lived in Australia for a while, or were you doing that remotely?
No, I lived there for a couple of years. It was fantastic. I was a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholar, and I chose Australia to get my master's degree, which was an incredible experience.
Yeah. Well, it's on my bucket list. So when we get ready to go, I'm calling you, Tommy. But I laughed at this when I read it. It was just kind of funny to me. When you were at East Carolina, you were the senior class president. You headed up 12 different organizations. You spoke at commencement. I'm thinking, leadership, speaking, all of this was in your DNA. For a long time, 12 organizations that you were leading? I mean, how insane is that?
I wish I had a little more fun in college, maybe drink a little bit more beer. I was an overachiever again. I graduated college with a 2.0. It took me 5.5 years to graduate because of my learning challenges. And so where I just fell in love with is, you know, I don't want to just be in a fraternity. I want to be president of fraternity. You know, I want to just get involved in organizations. And so I think I got all my learning outside the classroom, and I was kind of addicted to leadership positions because that's where I learned the most, because I didn't really learn much in the classroom.
That is funny. That is funny. Well, I think you worked for IBM for a while, but this is what I really want to talk about. You basically founded a few youth programs, and I'm thinking now, hearing your story, Tommy, I'm sure that just the way you grew up and you just saw this need for youth leadership, the National Academy of Leadership and the Global Youth Leadership Academy. And would you believe this? Our oldest son went through that academy. Oh. And I was thinking to myself, I'm thinking, how cool is that? It's come like full circle because you were the founder of that. But what was the driving force behind you wanting to found those organizations for youth?
Thanks for asking. We started National Leadership Academy and Global Youth Leadership Academy 25 years ago. We celebrated our anniversary. And I just wanted to bring young people together. And I want to get kids that got straight A's and kids like me that got straight F's and bring them together to teach them about servant leadership. And before the word servant leadership was even a word 25 years ago, I was really trying to teach kids how to love and serve other people. So the National Leadership Academy brings hundreds of high school kids in to learn about servant leadership every June for 5 days. And then the Global Youth Program is when we take 50 high school kids to Europe or somewhere in the world for a week-long intense program. And they're Black, they're white, they're rich, they're poor, they're all types of kids, but they're great kids that want to learn about how to change the world. And yes, I work with corporations and companies, and I write books on leadership for the corporate America, but my real love and my real heart is really working with high school kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how do you believe, what were you doing, Tommy, program-wise, to help them be those servant leaders of the future and more compassionate and to love people? What were some of the tenets of that program that you were trying to teach?
When I started the programs 25 years ago and I had to answer that question, I would have said, we're trying to teach high school kids, you know, the value of community service. Now, this year, our National Leadership Academy is going to be going to Homes for Hope to partner with our good friend, Shan Lambert. And so they're going to be building homes and teaching them the value of community service and the value of citizenship and loving your country and what you can do to make your country better and communication skills and so forth. And I think that's what I would have said 25 years ago, but after working with, you know, 15,000 high school kids over the last 25 years, I've answered that correctly now, which is we try to teach high school kids how to love themselves. Because I believe you can't truly love others and serve others unless you truly love who you are. Because if not, you want the attention and the recognition, and it's all about you. And the funny thing is, which I realized is after 25 years of writing books and working on the corporate sector, it's the same stuff, Lisa, that, you know, all the narcissistic, self-serving leaders in the world, that's not, you know, it's not really about serving others. It's about serving themselves. They all have one thing in common. Every manager, leader in the world that's all about self-serving leadership is that they don't love themselves. Because if they truly knew who they were in Christ, they would know it's not about them, that they're created to serve and love other people. So to teach a high school kid that took me till I was 30 or 40 or 50 to learn, that's really the essence of National Leadership Academy and our Global Youth Leadership Academy, is to teach them to love themselves, know who they are, so they can go out there and change the world and put others, before themselves and live a life of heart-led leadership.
There's so much packed in there. You and I could probably do a whole podcast on that because I cannot tell you how many, not just to your point, narcissistic leaders that are only serving themselves. I can't tell you how many adults, Tommy, that I've talked to that says, I don't like myself. I don't love myself. I'm not enough. Or they're focusing on the wrong things, right? And so I really had not planned on talking about this, but I want to camp out here for just a minute. I think it all starts with the thoughts that we take into our minds.
Yeah, and our hearts. Like, if you Google cigarettes and pregnancy, there's millions of people, millions of pictures on the internet of women in the 1960s smoking cigarettes. There's actually a famous one that are pregnant. There's a famous one of Jackie Onassis Kennedy smoking a cigarette while she's pregnant with JFK. They didn't know then that cigarettes cause cancer and it's not good to do this when you're pregnant. And I feel the same thing about leadership. We've been teaching heart-led leadership. That's what I call it. It's servant leadership, living a life of putting others before those you serve. But I think we're knowing now that the reason why there's narcissistic leaders or self-serving leaders or leaders that are all about them, it's because they don't truly love themselves. And so we're learning now that cigarettes are not good for you. And that you shouldn't smoke when you're pregnant. And I believe now we're teaching leaders that are adults that you truly can't lead a team of people, lead an organization or your family or your spouse or your children, unless you truly know who you are in Christ and love yourself. Because if not, you're going to live a life of just, trying to fill that hole, that empty hole. And there's not enough private jets and corner offices and stock options and money to fill that empty hole. You have to plug it and truly do the work. And that's why, leaders have to work on themselves constantly to truly love who you are. And Lisa, there's days I don't love myself, and I teach this stuff. I mean, it's a constant journey to figure out how to love ourselves.
Right. Well, we're not going to get too into it, but it's like renewing the mind, right? And who does it? And I know that we have listeners that subscribe to all sorts of belief systems. But as Christians, it's imago Dei, we are made in the image of God. Who does God say that you are? And so that's what I'm thinking when those thoughts come in, I'm not enough, or you hear the imposter syndrome, I can't do this. People are going to find out that I have warts or whatever the case may be. It's like, well, God says you are his masterpiece. God says your name is engraved in the palm of his hand. God, Jesus would have died on the cross if it had just been for you. He loved you that much, right? And so replacing those thoughts, renewing our minds, taking every thought captive and replacing them with those kind of thoughts, I think our minds are, and to your point, our hearts, we've got to get to the point where we capture those thoughts and take them captive and then replace them with the truth. Because those are not truth, those are lies, right? That we tell ourselves about ourselves. Boy, we could do a we could really get deep on this, Tommy. We probably should do another podcast about it. Well, so you've already kind of I was going to ask you, what do you see the youth of today struggling with? And you've already answered that, in that they don't love themselves. But I think, and I don't want to get too far down in the weeds here, but I do think social media has had a really, it can be positive. There's the positive and negative, right? But I think kids today with the social media and the comparison is not good for our mental health.
No. And I have three young people in my life, one in college, one in high school, two in college actually. And and they are great kids. They've been down to Mexico to build homes every summer and Like they love Jesus and they struggle with identity because of social media. I think we're going to learn 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now that how it's really, social media is really hurting how young people think of themselves.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's get into this because in 2009, you founded the Spalding Leadership Institute and the Tommy Spalding Companies. I want to take a minute to talk about influence. So, your latest book, you're working on a book right now. So, just whet the appetite of our listeners. Hopefully, we'll all be looking at that. But you wrote the book, The Gift of Influence, and that was your latest one. I want to talk about this for a little bit. I'm going to ask you a few overarching questions and then I want to dig in more, but it's an interesting topic. Years ago, Tommy, I remember moderating a panel and there was an executive of a large global company on this panel. And she said something interesting. She said, when I became a leader, the first question I asked everybody around me is, how do I have influence? How can I get trained in influence? Because really, without influence, you're really not going to be able to accomplish much. But you've already talked a little bit about Ken Blanchard and how influential he was in your life. Are there other people that have had influence on you that come to mind today? And how did they have that influence? And what was different about them?
Yeah, the people that have had the biggest influence on my life, I have a relationship with them. And that's the thing that we had to do when we wrote the book, The Gift of Influence, is that we had to kind of almost hijack that word back. Because if you look up the word influence in the dictionary or influencer, it really talks about social media, going back to that, and how many pocketbooks or bottles of tequila you can sell online. And that's not what an influencer is. An influencer has nothing to do with social media, how many likes we get, or how many friends we have on social media, or how many widgets we can sell. An influencer is someone that can have a relationship with another human being and have a positive or negative influence, on their life. And I think that's the measure of leadership. And for years, I used to think influence was a big part of leadership. And now I realize I was completely wrong. Influence is not a part of leadership. Influence is. It is leadership. I mean, people are never going to say, I love the way they fathered me or mothered me. I love the way someone led me, or I love someone, coach. Like they're going to say, this person had a huge influence on my life. And if you think about all the teachers or coaches or managers or leaders, outside of our family who had an influence positively or negatively, I mean, influence is really our legacy. Our leadership legacy and our choices. Do we want to have a positive influence or a negative influence on people's lives? And the choices are always ours.
Yeah, that's so good. And I always say, like in the marketplace, we have that opportunity to be the positive or the negative influence every single day with the people that we interact with. We may never know this side of heaven, Tommy, truly, what kind of influence that we've had. It's not always like you're going to get that, you're not always going to get that feedback, right? But I told you that we drove the CIO summit here in St. Louis yesterday. And do you know what it was about? It was not, we talked about Gen AI, we talked about blockchain, we talked about relationships and why relationships matter and how these CIOs can love their teams more, how can they can care and show compassion. And even when they have to critique, sometimes you do have to critique, but how do you do that in a caring, loving way? That was the crux of the whole day yesterday. And these are CIOs, these are tech leaders, but so true. Well, I highly, highly recommend the book, The Gift of Influence, to our listeners. And you've already talked about this. You said everyone has the potential of being an influencer. We've talked about that. But what do you think are some of the key characteristics of someone who wields influence responsibly and effectively?
Well, one is just to be intentional of the people that come into our lives. And I heard this years ago. It was actually John Gordon who said it. And we had him at one of our fundraisers for one of my nonprofits, and I love John, and he was just, chatting about influence, and he talked about the average human being influences 80,000 people in their life. And then he went on to something else because he has ADHD just like me. And I did some research behind it, and there was actually research done, Lisa, that the average human being on the planet influences 80,000 people in their life. And when I first heard that, it moved me. That's a lot of people, 80,000 people. And that's what I wanted to write the book about. And so I did the math. You take 80,000 people and you divide that by 77 years of the average life expectancy, and you divide that by 365 days in a year, you get 2.8 people. So basically, research shows that the average human being wakes up every morning and meets 2.8 new people a day, whether new customers, new neighbors, new friends, the barista at Starbucks, the Uber driver, the flight attendant. But we meet 2.8 new people a day. And if you multiply that by 365 days a year and 77 years of your life expectancy of the average life, you get 80,000 people. And that just number just moved me, Lisa. Like that we have this opportunity to change 80,000 lives, and we have a choice whether it's going to be positive or negative. And that was really the premise of the book.
Yeah. Oh boy. I love it. Well, you already talked about the intentionality. We talked a little bit about, I love this. You've got a quote in the book, and I love it, about leaving a legacy. It says, "It takes more than a title to create a legacy. Titles mean little unless they're accompanied by ideas and actions that make a difference in other people's lives." And my husband Greg has always said that. He's always said, when we were in college, Tommy, he said, "Lisa, when we graduate, if we can build a company and do well as a company, we can do a lot of good in the world." And Greg has always said that. He's like, "I've never been impressed by people that just do things for themselves. That's not impressive. It's what you do for other people." And I love, it means nothing unless it's accompanied by influence and making an impact in other people's lives.
Yeah, and that's where we have to check our intentionality in our hearts. Because in nature, Lisa, we're kind of transactional people. I do this for you do this for me. I help you help me, right? And I just don't agree with that. I just think if we could really work on our hearts, whereas I'd like to help you to help you and want nothing in return. And I want to start this organization to truly do good in the world and want nothing in return. When you live a life of wanting nothing in return, that's when the blessings really start to happen in our organizations and our lives. But it's a leap of faith that you're going to love and serve and help others and provide for others and want really nothing in return. And it's in the antithesis of a transaction. But the deepest relationships we have with people is when you have an authentic, genuine, heartfelt servant relationship. And when you want something in return, it's a transaction. And so I'd like to live a transaction-free life. And you still could be incredibly successful doing that. It's just your internal your internal motives, your interior motives. They have to be pure.
Well, when you live that kind of life, Tommy, you're certainly going to be truly more joyful in life. So you do get something in return. You're going to be more peaceful. You're going to be able to lay your head on the pillow at night knowing that you gave. And also, it's not just an internal rate of return. I always say we need to be focused on the ERR, the eternal rate of return, right? And so that's a measure of success in my book.
I like that ER. Yeah, I love it.
The ERR. Well, we need to take a really quick break, and then we'll be right back with Tommy Spaulding on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Tommy Spaulding. We have been having so much fun and just have talked about some wonderful, wonderful things. I know that I know our listeners are going to really be able to take a lot of gold away from today. But Tommy, you wrote a blog in January that I read that was so good, and you were talking about influence. You took a trip to Haiti with Tim Brand, and you said Tim taught you more about love in that 5-day trip to Haiti than in all of your years on the planet. You talk about his book, Standing on the Shoulders, and I can't wait to read that. But you said there's 36,000 words in his book, and there are 32 words that will change your life. Do you remember what those words were?
Oh.
I can prompt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, here's the words. Will those who come behind you need to fix all the things that you broke during your life? Or will they stand on the foundations that you've built stronger because of the way that you have lived?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, Tim Brand, he started that Many Hands for Haiti, which is one of my top two. You know, Homes for Hope and Many Hands are probably my two favorite charities. And how I met him is I was mentoring a high school kid, and the father said, you know, our son is gonna, you know, probably inherit a lot of money, and he's gonna be an influencer in people's lives, and I want to teach him philanthropy. So I was coaching this kid and decided to take him to a third world country to really get into his heart about how blessed we are and to see the poverty in the world. And I met Tim Brand through a mutual friend. And we planned this amazing trip for me and the other guy was the high school kid was Tommy. So it was Tommy and Tim going down to Haiti. And the night before the trip to Haiti, the 5-day mission trip, Tommy called up and bailed, which was totally disappointing. And now I had to make a decision. You know, I planned this trip purely to change Tommy's life. And but Timmy, who I'd never met before, you know, Tim Brand organized this incredible trip, and the founder was flying down to Haiti to meet us to show us around. And so I just felt that the right thing to do was for me to go anyway. And God had a plan, Lisa, because God didn't want to change the high school kid, Tommy. God wanted to change the adult Tommy, me. And I went down there, and you know, a 90-minute flight from Miami is the poorest country in the world. And I've been to Ethiopia. I've been to the poorest countries in the world. I've never seen poverty like Haiti. And to see Tim and, you know, pour into the poorest of poor, it just made me fall in love with his ministry, and also fall in love with, you know, helping and serve the poor. And so every year we try to do something like that in our family. And it's just the most humbling thing when you could see how people live with no running water, no electricity, dirt floors, not even cement walls or not even wood walls. They live in, you know, like tree houses type sticks, and the smile they have in their face and how happy they are and the most beautiful giving people. It's just, I believe every human being on the planet needs to find a way to tap into serving the poor at least every 12 months of their life. It's not something that you do when you check off and said, oh, serve the poor. I got my ticket to heaven, or I'm good to go. It's like every year you have to find a way to serve the poor. Yeah.
It keeps everything in perspective, doesn't it, Tommy? And to your point, because we've done those trips too. We worked in orphanages in El Salvador, and I just remember these boys playing soccer on concrete with no shoes.
Yeah.
And they would eat 3 meals of rice and beans a day. And one day we brought in pizza and Coca-Cola, and you would have thought they had died and gone to heaven. They were so excited. And I do think it's so good. And I think it's so good for your children, all of us, to see that. Right. But they were still happy.
Yeah.
They were still happy. And yeah. It will break your heart, but it will change your heart, to your point. So, well, let's talk about The Heart-Led Leader, and another amazing book, New York Times and a Wall Street Journal, number one bestseller, was named on the Inc.com's 100 business books to read. Yo, I think our friend, we talked about this, Shel Batchelder was an endorser. She's a dear friend of ours, John O'Leary. So we have a lot. And Walt Wachovich is
Yeah.
also another friend that we're endorsers. But, you know, what do you mean? Explain this, because you talk about the 18 inches.
Yeah.
Talk about the 18 inches, Tommy.
So for a couple hundred years, we've been kind of brainwashed to bring your heads to work and leave your hearts home. We've all heard that. Bring your heads to work and leave your hearts home. Your heart is for your loved ones, and you bring your heads to work. And for 200 years, we've been brainwashed that often the smartest person in the room was the leader, right? And leadership is about being strategic and analytical and thinker and really led from the mind. But the greatest leaders in the world, and you mentioned two of them, Walt Rakowicz and Cheryl Bachelder, the greatest servant leaders that are literally running organizations today, found a way to connect the head and the heart. And I call that in the book, the journey of 18 inches, or the 18-inch journey. And that's from the distance from the head to the heart. The brain and the heart is actually 18 inches on the human body. And that's where we connect the head and the heart. And it's not enough to be smart and analytical and strategic and mindful. It's not enough just to lead with the head. You have to lead with the heart, and that's with love. And that's with humility and transparency and vulnerability and authenticity. And these words that were used as soft words 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. But today, I believe the greatest leaders in the world are the ones that lead with the heart and lead with love. And the greatest organizations that have the most profound results are the ones that wake up every day and lead with love.
Yeah, Tommy, and I love that because to your point, sometimes those words are perceived as weak, right? Now, this does not mean because an organization does not exist without results. So I talked to Pat Lencioni about this, and he said when he comes into companies, one of the things that he sees that's very weak in organizations is accountability systems. And oftentimes it's because, Tommy, if you were in my organization, I'd be like, well, or you would say, Lisa does really needs to improve in this area, but I really don't want to talk to her about that because I don't want to hurt her feelings or I don't want to cause conflict or what. And Tom in Pat's whole he goes, but if you really love people, you're not going to want to leave them where they are. That's not really being loving. So it doesn't, when you talk about these words, it's not that you aren't expecting that you don't have high expectations, but it's the way you go about it, though, right?
Yeah, well, it's no different than parenting. I mean, your children listen to you not because you're their mother or father, it's because they love you and you love them. And we fail to bring that to the work, place, is that if you truly love people, you're going to hold them accountable. And that's why I wrote that story about Cheryl Bachelder with Popeyes. Because when you meet Cheryl, she's just a wonderful, genuine, humble, soft-spoken, giant of a woman. But when I wrote the chapter, I researched her and I interviewed her staff and her executive team. She'll eat you for freaking lunch. She's so tough. I mean, Cheryl is a tough woman and she held people accountable. But because she loved her people and was humble and genuine, authentic and heartfelt, her people loved her. It was absolute accountability. And so I wrote a whole chapter called About Love and Results, is if you want results, and you define results any way you want. For me, how I define results in my life is my parents got divorced, my grandparents on my dad's side got divorced, my older sister got divorced, my younger sister got divorced, aunts, uncles, cousins divorced. Like, I'm the first person in my entire two generations, almost three generation of family not divorced. And so results for me is I want to stay married to the same woman, and I want to model a great marriage. Results for me is I want a relationship with my adult children. I think we fail to realize as parents that our kids have to live with us until they're 18. It's called the law. But after 18, they don't have to do life with us. That's called choice. So if you want a real relationship with your children and do life with them and vacations and holidays and they get married and that they're part of your family, if you want to have this life journey with your children, we have to earn that. And that's how I define results. And I want to be the same person on the pages of my books and on stage when I'm addressing audiences. I want to be the same person off stage. I want to be authentic and genuine. That's how I define results. So you define results any way you want, your organization. And the only way to reach those results is if you have love in your heart to love and serve other people and bring love in your organization. And love is like your operating system of your organization. And it's not touchy-feely. It's not soft, woo-woo, water cooler stuff. This is about hitting hardcore results by putting love at the forefront of an organization.
That's good. That's a mic drop right there, Tommy. That's a mic drop. We can just stop right there. Go get the book. Go get the book, listeners. I promise you, you will love it. Well, let me ask you just a couple questions, and I have just a fun lightning round here for you. How do you, as a leader, continue to grow? What are your go-tos? I mean, I know that you've got amazing people in your life that you probably read their material or listen to their material. What else do you do, Tommy?
Yeah. So if you interviewed my wife, Jill, if I can just tell this quick little answer story, and I've been married 20 years, what do you love most about your husband? For years, I thought she'd say, oh, I love the fact that he started this youth program, or he's got these great books to help people, or it's great that, or, but if you ask Jill, and I've seen many people ask her this question, she always answers the same way. She always says, what I love most about my husband is he's obsessed with getting better. Like every day, he's trying to become a better follower of Christ, a better husband, a better father, a better thought leader. Like he's always working on getting better. And with all of his success, it's motivating him more to get better. And I first of all, I love that. I want to be that guy that she talks about. But I think that's the name of the game, is that every day we have to get better. And for me, I don't read books very well, so I do some audiobooks. But how I get better is I surround myself with awesome people. If I want to go deeper in my faith, I have breakfast with Jerry Middle every week or a call with him because that guy knows the Bible inside and out. When I want to get better in my marriage, I got a buddy, Terry Adams, who's got the best marriage I know, and his kids just love him. So he teaches me. So I have this kitchen cabinet of people. You mentioned Walt Rakowicz. I mean, probably the most humble, genuine leader I've ever met. And how do you become like him? So I hang out with him. So I just love this, like this quote. I think it was said like 1,000 years ago. Some French philosopher said, tell me who your friends are. Tell me who your friends are. Tell me who you hang out with. Tell me who you love, and I'll tell you who you become. I love that. And so I just hang out with great people. And I know this sounds kind of stuck up, and it might sound it, but it's the truth, is when I was in high school and college, I was insecure because I was a terrible student. So I liked to have friends. I was by far the most popular kid in high school, was named the most popular kid in high school. And in college, I could walk by, 36,000 students, East Carolina. I knew everyone's name. I just love being popular. And today I do not want to be popular. I don't want to have more friends. Matter of fact, I want to have less friends. I want to have really intentional friends in my life that are great husbands, that are great fathers, that are great followers of Christ, that are great servant leaders. And I want to hang out with these men and these women as well, that are great wives, that are great leaders, that are great mothers, so I can learn from them. This weekend, I'm going to see Clemson, Georgia game with my dear friend, Jimmy Blanchard. And I met Jimmy Blanchard through Ken Blanchard, no relation. And Jimmy was the chairman CEO of Synovus Bank, one of the largest banks in the country. He's now in his 80s. He's had an incredible career. But I was on a ministry with him called Lead Like Jesus, which was a ministry founded by Ken Blanchard. That's how I met Dan Cathy, Chick-fil-A, the Jimmy Blanchard. Was the pinnacle leader of, if you ask Walt Rakowicz, you ask Mike Duke with Walmart, you ask all the greatest servant leaders who their servant leader idyllic guy was, is Jimmy Blanchard. And he is the most humble, genuine, this amazing person. And Jill and I get to spend the weekend with him and his wife, Sis, this weekend. And I've been counting down the days just to spend 2 days with the man that knows how to put others before himself, that knows how to treat his wife well, knows how to treat his kids. And all his grandchildren have done the GYLA leadership program in Europe with me. And they just talk about their grandfather as the most humble, genuine guy. And the marketplace, as you call it, Lisa, looks at Jimmy Blanchard as one of the most incredible leaders, you know, in the world. And the results that he had was unprecedented, but it all came up from a place of humility. And to me, that is the most important quality of all leadership, is humility. And humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking less of you know, of yourself more often, less often, as you know. And I just think that the secret sauce of leadership, of heart-led leadership, is when these two things can collide. When you can have high confidence, like truly believe who you are, love yourself enough, that high confidence with deep humility. Like when I go on stage with 10,000 people, I know that God gave me a talent, that all 10,000 people are going to be hanging on every word. I have absolute confidence I can deliver a message that'll be life-changing for them. There's the confidence part. But it's also myths and humility that I'm on that stage because God gave me this gift, and only God gave me this gift. And it's truly through him, and God is channeling his words through me. And I'm just a messenger. So there's a deep humility that I'd be nothing without him. And that's what makes leaders like Walt Rakowicz and Jimmy Blanchard and Ken Blanchard and Mike Duke and Dan Cathy, all these names we talked about. That's what makes them successful, is they have absolute confidence in who they are and what they can do. But it's seated with deep humility, and those two together, because mostly when you have high confidence, you have arrogance. You know, there's arrogance that comes with success and wealth and positional authority. But the leaders that I follow, the more success, the more wealth, the more positional authority, right? The more fame, is the more humble they become.
More humble they become.
Oh, beautiful. Like it's just beautiful when you can have those. And it's just tragic when you have all these people with fame and success and money and wealth, and they just, you know, there's a saying, and like when you write a book and you start believing in all the quotes behind the back of your book, like all the wonderful things about you, when you actually start believing that, that's when the game over, you know, like
game over.
I still pick up my books and read the back of my books, and you say, oh my God, I can't believe people think about this way. You have to lead with humility. And if you can't get that, you're not going to get very far.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. I've got one fun question for you. I know you have a dog.
Yes. Yes. I do.
And I know what your dog's name is. So I was going to ask you your favorite sport, I am assuming, is hockey.
How did you know my dog was Gretzky?
Gretzky. Yeah. Gretzky's your dog. So what? Oh my goodness. Wayne Gretzky has got so many famous quotes. Name one of his quotes. I mean, I've got the one of my own. I love the one about don't skate where the puck has been, skate where it's going, right?
Well, that's a great hockey player. Like a good hockey player sees where the puck is. A great hockey player sees where the puck is going. Yes. But my favorite Wayne Gretzky quote is, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And, you know, I was married. My wife was married before I married her. She had a 2-year-old boy when I met her, and then I married her when he was 4. And now that 4-year-old boy, I love him like my son, and he is my son, but he's my stepson. And he's now a senior at West Point Military Academy, and he's captain of the hockey club team there. And he just fell in love with hockey, and he's awesome at it. And now my little son, or his little brother, my younger son, Tate, is 16, and he just got drafted to the United States Hockey League. So he's got an incredible path. So hockey's been a big part of our lives, and I don't even know how to skate. I couldn't even skate two lines, but I love the sport. Jill and I go to all the games, and we're just so proud of our boys, because not only are they great on the ice, but more importantly, they love Jesus, and it's all about humility to them. And it's all about putting their players and their teammates first. And we couldn't be more proud of our boys.
You should be. Yeah. You should be. Well, I'm just thinking to myself, if you get any more animals, We're going to have Hull or Brett.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think you've already answered this, but just repeat it for me. What is the something extra every leader needs, Tommy?
Yeah, I believe it's the enzyme, it's the chromosome of love. Is, every day when we wake up, we have to be intentional with that. And one of the things that I've been really thinking about is intentionality starts every morning. I call it an audit. You can call it a relationship audit, an influence audit, but people, this is a real great to do. When you wake up, you do your Bible study, you exercise, you think about your day. And here's my mind, how my mind works. Who in my life is experiencing pain that needs my love? See, we run towards Christmas cards and birthday cards and 50th wedding anniversaries and congratulations on graduating high school and IPO in your company and 50th. We run towards celebrating, when people have all these good things in their life. And we do so good at calling people up and say, hey, congratulations, your kids graduating West Point, or you just sold your company, or you're married 50 years. We do so good at reaching out to all our family and friends when they touch happiness. But when I turned 50 years old and my wife had a birthday party for me with my best friends in the world, my best friend Corey Tor from Little League, 12-year-old kid, the kids met Corey. When he got up at the table, Lisa, here's what he said. When my wife cheated on me and left me 3 years ago, I was a single dad with three boys. I gained 200 pounds in over a year and a half. And drank too much, and I had no self-confidence. And my best friend Tommy Spaulding called me every day for a year and told me he loved me. Right? That's what leadership is. That's what love is. Is sometimes we have to run towards the people in our lives that are hurting. So every morning I wake up and I do this, intentional like audit of the people in my life. Who's going through cancer? Who's going divorce? Who's going through bankruptcy? Who's got a kid that has depression? Who's got a, I mean, it, I wrote a whole chapter about how do you do that? And I think human nature is we care about these people, but it's awkward. Like I have a friend named Scott who lost his son with teenage suicide. He was bullied, cyber bullied, jumped off a bridge, killed himself. And I wrote about this in my book. And when I went to have lunch with him, about a year after his son's death, he said to me, I know all my family and friends felt terrible, losing Teddy. But you're the one that called me every week. You sent Bible verses. You sent me a book on grieving. You sent packages. You prayed for me. You texted me. Like you just were, you showed up when I really needed a friend. And I think we do a good job showing up when our friends and family and our clients and customers and our employees are doing good things, but we fail to show up when when the tough things happen. We need to do better at that. And so that's my closing words. That's the, the something extra is that's what we need to do, Lisa, show up in people's lives and show up the people when we truly, when they truly need us. That's our legacy.
That's good. You got me crying, Tommy. That's good. I could not agree more with you. And sometimes we don't do that because, to your point, it's awkward. It's like, well, what do we say? What do we say? And sometimes it's just, to your point, just want you to know I'm thinking about you. Just want you to know I love you. A simple text can mean the world. So it's beautiful. Well, this has been so much fun, my friend. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for making the time. And I cannot wait for your next book. I cannot wait to get to one of the heart-led conferences. We're going to do some stuff together. I want to go. You talked about Clemson, the Shepherd's
The shepherd,
Hotel. I'm ready to go to the Shepherd's Hotel. So yeah. So thanks again, and good luck with your new book.
yeah, Lisa, you're, and I enjoyed our conversation even before the podcast. You're a beautiful soul.
Ditto. Back at you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.